was sitting on a wooden bench in the bright sunlight, leaning back against the adobe wall of one of the dwellings, his broad-brimmed hat pulled low over his eyes. "Are you sleeping, Grandfather?" Jamie asked softly. He was 9 years old again, and he couldn't tell if he were on Mars or back at the old Pueblo where Al bargained for rugs and pottery to sell in his store in Santa Fe.
"Nah, I'm not sleeping, Jamie. I was waiting for you."
"I'm here."
Al looked at his grandson and smiled. "That's good."
Spreading his arms, Jamie asked, "Where is everybody? The village is empty."
"They've all gone."
"Gone where?"
"I don't know. Nobody knows. That's what you've got to find out, grandson."
"But where could they have gone?"
"To find their destiny," said Al. "To find their own right path."
Jamie sat on the bench beside his grandfather. The sun felt warm and strengthening. "Tell me about them, Grandfather. Tell me about the people who lived here."
Al laughed, a low, happy chuckle. "Nah, I can't tell you that, Jamie boy. You have to tell me."
Jamie felt puzzled. "But I don't know."
"Then you'll have to find out, son."
Jamie's eyes popped open.
For once, his dream did not fade from him. It was as vivid as any real memory.
He pushed back the thin sheet that covered him and got to his feet. After the long night they had all put in, he should have felt tired, drained. Yet he was awake, alert, eager to start the day.
Quickly, he stepped to his desk and booted up his laptop, then opened the communications channel to Rodriguez and Fuchida. With a glance at the desktop clock, he saw that it was 6:33. He hesitated for only a moment, though, then put through a call to the two men at Olympus Mons. As he suspected, they were both awake. Jamie's laptop screen showed the two of them side by side in the plane's cockpit.
"Good morning," he said.
"Did you sleep well?"
"Extremely well," said Fuchida.
"This cockpit looked like the best hotel suite in the world when we got into it last night," Rodriguez said.
Jamie nodded. "Yeah, I guess it did."
Rodriguez gave a crisp, terse morning report. Fuchida happily praised the astronaut for purging his suit of the foul air and fixing the electrical connection that had banged loose in his backpack.
"My suit fans are buzzing faithfully," he said, "but I'm afraid I won't be able to do much useful work on my bad ankle."
They had discussed the ankle injury the previous night, once Fuchida had regained consciousness. Vijay guessed that it was a sprain, but wanted to get the biologist back to the dome as quickly as possible for an X-ray. Jamie had decided to let Rodriguez carry out as much of their planned work as he could, alone, before returning. Their schedule called for another half-day on the mountaintop, then a takeoff in the early afternoon for the flight back to the dome. They should land at the base well before sunset.
"I'll be happy to take off this suit," Fuchida confessed.
"We're not going to smell so good when we do," Rodriguez added. Jamie found himself peering hard at the small screen of his laptop, trying to see past their visors. Impossible, of course. But they both sounded cheerful enough. The fears and dangers of the previous night were gone. Daylight and the relative safety of the plane brightened their outlook. Rodriguez said, "We've decided that I'm going back down inside the caldera and properly implant the beacon we left on the ledge there.
So we can get good data from it," Fuchida added, as if he were afraid Jamie would countermand their decision.
Jamie asked, "Do you really think you should try that?"
"Ought to be simple enough," Rodriguez said easily.
"Long as I don't go near that damned lava tube again."
"Is there enough sunlight where you want to plant the beacon?" Jamie asked.
He sensed the biologist nodding inside his helmet.
"Oh, yes. The ledge receives a few hours of sunlight each day."
"So we'll get data from inside the caldera," Rodriguez prompted.
"Not very far inside," Fuchida added, "but it will be better than no data at all."
"You really set on doing this?"
"Yes," they both said.
Jamie could feel their determination. It was their little victory over Olympus Mons, their way of telling themselves that they were not afraid of the giant volcano.
"Okay, then," Jamie said.
"But be careful now."
"We're always careful," said Fuchida.
"Most of the time," Rodriguez added, with a laugh.
"How's the weather report?" Craig asked.
"About the same.
Dex Trumbull replied from up in the rover's cockpit. He was driving while Craig cleaned up their breakfast crumbs and folded the table back down into the floor between the bunks. Craig came up and sat in the right-hand seat. The sun was just clear of the increasingly rugged eastern horizon. "Want me to drive?" he asked. "No way, Wiley. I'm going to break the interplanetary speed record today and get this baby up to 35 clicks per hour." Craig made a snorting laugh. "You'll need a hell of a tailwind for that, buddy." "Nope, just some downhill slope." "Lots of luck." "I'm not kidding, Wiley. The plane slopes downhill all the way to Xanthi." "Sure," said Craig. "And if we had a good breeze behind us, we could really make time." Trumbull glanced at him, then said, "Check the incoming messages, huh?" There were two messages in the file, both from Stacy. The first one told them about Fuchida's accident and Rodriguez's rescue of him, and the biologist's discovery of the siderophiles. The two men listened to Hall's brief summary, then glanced at each other. Craig let out a low whistle. "I wonder what Mitsuo's jockey shorts look like." Trumbull laughed and shook his head. "I don't want to know." Dejurova's second message was a weather report. The dust storm was spreading, but still confined below the equator. "As long as it stays in the southern hemisphere, we're free and clear," Trumbull said happily. Craig was less cheerful. As he stared at the weather map on their screen, he muttered, "It's growing, though. If it crosses the equator, we're going to be in trouble." "Don't be a dweeb, Wiley. This vehicle's been through a dust storm before, you know."
"Yeah, and I've jumped off a burning oil platform into the Gulf of Mexico, too."
Trumbull's answer was to lean harder on the accelerator. Craig watched the speedometer edge up past 31 kilometers per hour. With a grim smile, he remembered an old prize fighter's maxim. "You can run, but you can't hide." Tarawa. Pete Connors was off duty, actually enjoying the beach in front of the two-story condo where he was living, when the phone call came. Since he was the chief of mission control for the Mars expedition, Connors carried a cellular phone wherever he went. Not that you could get very far from the control center on the narrow islets of the atoll. He was lying comfortably on an old blanket, his heels wedged into the soft white sand, listening to the rhythmic beat of the surf against the reef when the little phone beeped. Even from inside the plastic beach bag, it managed to sound urgent. With a sigh of exasperation, Connors pulled himself up to a sitting position and groped in the bag for the phone. He had brought the video attachment, too, but decided not to bother with it unless he had to look at some data. "Connors," he said crisply, as a gull swooped low across the beach, looking for leftovers. "Dr. Li Chengdu here," came the Chinese academician's voice, as clear as if he were on the islet with him.
"Dr. Li, how are you?"
Connors sat up straighter.
"My health is excellent. And you?"
"Couldn't be better," Connors said ritually. The truth was he hadn't gotten enough sleep since the explorers had landed on Mars and had made him feel cranky much of the time.
"I want to apprise you of a possible problem," Lee's voice said, flat and steady, no emotion in it.
"A problem?"
"Perhaps I am being overly pessimistic, but you are more friendly with Waterman than I was, and..."
"A problem with Jamie?" Connors felt startled.
"Not with him. About him."
"What do you mean?" Lee hesitated only a heartbeat.
"As you know, I am on the advisory board of the International Consortium of Universities Committee for the Mars Expedition."
"The ICU, yeah."
"I just received a call from the committee chairwoman, Professor Quentin of Cambridge."
"I know who she is," Connors said, wondering when Lee was going to get to the point.
"She, in turn, was called earlier by Mr. Trumbull."
"Uh-oh," thought Connors. "The money man is sore about something."
"Mr. Trumbull," Lee went on, "is suggesting that Waterman be replaced as mission director."
"Replaced?" Connors snapped. "That's hogwash.
Trumbull is very insistent, I fear.
How the hell can they replace Jamie while the team's out there on Mars?" This time, Lee's hesitation was more noticeable.
"This could affect funding for the next expedition, of course."
"What the hell's Trumbull pissed off about?" Connors demanded, forgetting his usual respect for the man who had been the mission director of the first expedition.
"That is not completely clear to me.
then what can we do